Good evening and welcome to the Raucous Caucus, live now. Live at Ben's Next Door. Next door to Ben's Chili Bowl, 12th and June. Mark, Terry, and Garland, three minds linked and locked in analysis, wit, and sagacity. Every Tuesday night, live. Live right here, 7 p.m. WPFW 89.3 FM. Welcome again, live with Terry, Mark, and Garland, and the Raucous Caucus. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome once again to the Raucous Caucus. If you plan to fly, it's cold orange security level at National and Dulles Airport. And if you plan to breathe, it's cold orange air quality. So don't. But welcome to Washington anyway, and welcome to the Raucous Caucus, and welcome to Ben's Next Door. It is a pleasure to have you with us tonight. And I am Terry D. Kester, and on my right is...
Mark Levine.
And on my other right is...
Garland Nixon.
You guys did it right this time.
Arnold Rothstein.
You're making
progress. Garland Nixon.
You got the names down?
I remember my name.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Okay, I'm impressed already.
Shows I'm not hungover yet.
Hardly. Hey, I gotta do a little promo here. We've got to remind our audience, listening and audience in attendance, that we're in the process of electing our local WPFW board. And as a WPFW member, and we hope you are all WPFW members, you'll be receiving your ballot after August 16th, not that far away. Besides, that's also my birthday, so if you want to send gifts, send them directly to the station. You know, I'll pick them up there. In the meantime, you got to head to the election website, which is PacificaElections2010.org. to find out who is running and why for the board. And remember, Pacifica is the only network, truly is, the only network that allows its members to participate directly in our decision-making process. Nobody else, nothing on PBS or NPR.
It's a very powerful thing.
Yeah, it is. And, you know,
don't ruin it, folks.
You don't get that right.
Vote
with
for the right people.
You don't get that right with Congress. You have no right, you know, in their decision-making progress. You have no rights in terms of the elections in general, but for
and if you're a D.C. resident, you have no rights
in whatsoever, right? So forget about it.
That's right. This is the only way you get to vote.
WPFW is the only way you get to vote that matters. So, you know, pay attention and look at that ballot and be sure and vote after the 16th when you get your ballot and be sure to mail it back. PacificaElections2010.org. Okay, tonight on the Raucous Caucus with Mark, with Garland. As hard as it may be, we're going to clear the air. We're going to soar to new intellectual and political heights.
We've reached depths before. Absolutely promise.
The topic tonight is what price security? Now, as you know, there are about 1.5 billion topics that could consume us on the Raucous and within the caucus. But there's one topic that we, America, continue to hide from. We place our heads in the sands of denial, and that topic is, of course, what price? Security. What are we willing to knowingly surrender for the sake of feeling just a bit safer?
$1.95.
$1.380, actually.
I'll sacrifice Mark.
You'll sacrifice Mark. There we have it. Solution solved.
That's the kind of guy I am.
I never considered Mark a right. I mean, to the right, yes, but not a right.
You don't own me. 13th Amendment.
We'll change that. Don't worry. Anyway. We are a paranoid empire. We live in fear of strange unknown enemies. We do not trust our government to administer or protect us. We live in permanent marketing consumer-driven insecurity. We are permanently inadequate unless we buy, own, whatever is next. The question is, therefore, are we discarding our liberty, our rights, in a mad pursuit to feel safe, secure, and temporarily satisfied? Is this, in fact, the base reason that everybody in the country wants a gun, plus a really good supply of ammo? By the way, I have good news on that. They finally have caught up with the demand of ammo that was being purchased. There's plenty of ammunition out there.
That's good, because the Tea Party activists were really worried about that.
Yeah, they have been. But now there's got enough ammo so we can all get guns to further protect ourselves from whatever it is.
Nothing worse than having more people to shoot than you have ammo.
That's sad. You know, that's sad. That's a sad situation.
Or more guns than you have ammo.
And besides that, we preach and celebrate xenophobic freedom endlessly, mindlessly, every national holiday, including the one just passed. And by the way, it was on July 2nd that the Declaration of Independence was signed, not on July 4th.
But it was presented to Congress on the 4th.
Yeah, I know, I know. But, you know, let's get our dates correct. Anyway, we celebrate freedom endlessly and mindlessly. We video and record and store every moment of our existence, almost. Last count, you are on a government or security camera 20 to 26 times a day on average. 20 to 26 times a day, somebody is videotaping you. I don't mean with their little cell phone. I mean on security, banks, restaurants, whatever.
And that's still not as scary as Facebook, but we'll get to that.
And Facebook, yeah. Just as an example of how far things have gone and gotten a little bit crazy, of course, so we know about the no-fly, and we know about the problems at airports. My brother, who was here scowling last week, he wore sandals on his last flight to avoid taking off his shoes, sockless, and they demanded to personally examine his bare feet. You know, they pulled him out of line. I don't know.
Was he hiding weapons in his bare feet?
I don't know. His bare
feet. Did he have like a fake toe that was really a stick of dynamite?
Could have been. I don't know
exactly
what it
was. Maybe he had a corn inside the corn.
You know, yeah, but anyway.
A nuclear suitcase.
And again, to reflect upon our insecurity with our security, various people I know, unfortunately, went out and bought their first guns shortly after watching the Katrina tragedy. They're still buying ammo. Our leaders,
can you stop hurricanes with guns? I didn't even know you could do that, Carl. I'm learning so much.
No, you can only stop oil spills with guns.
Oh, okay.
But you've got to shoot a lot.
Fire into the water,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right. And I know that also, as you know, our various leaders are obsessed with security. Maybe rightly so, but it's a good question on what does that mean for our freedom. And finally, of course, we have to look at torture because we're still torturing whomever, wherever we want to. Don't think we're not. We still claim we have value, life, and human dignity, and we beg God to bless our frightened country at the scores of sporting events every single day, while the madmen nibble away at every freedom we ever thought we had, imperiling our personal security, mostly in the name of national security. There you have it, guys. That's basically what we're exploring.
Terry's manifesto tonight.
Yeah, that's my manifesto.
I disagree with most of it, but we'll get to it.
And it's being published in all the major papers by tomorrow morning, along with places to
meet. You to Montana and put you in a shack? Is that allowed?
Only if they have good mail service.
Right.
It's very important, you know.
He lives in Virginia, so with the governor have, it's pretty much the same.
It's not
as
that different.
Yeah,
it's
Montana,
the same
Virginia,
yeah.
Idaho.
Good point.
It's all the same anymore.
You know, I'm the only Virginian, as a matter of fact, that I know of, maybe for Mark, that doesn't have a whole lot of guns. I don't know about how you.
I don't have a single gun.
You and I are stuck.
Did I just make myself vulnerable?
Yeah, we're stuck. We're going to get it. Anyway.
I've never owned a gun. I've never shot a gun other than a play gun.
Well, you got to at least have some fun in your life, Mark.
I got knives, but I mostly use them to cut vegetables.
How are you going to protect yourself from those UN black?
Anyway, we're getting distracted. Here we go from the ACLU.
With my nuclear suitcase.
Here's a couple of reports, Garland. Ayman Lafif is a U.S. citizen and disabled Marine veteran living in Egypt with no way to travel to the United States, where he was born and raised. Can't get here to introduce himself to his new baby daughter, to the rest of his family who still resides in the States. Can't take the required Veterans Administration exams to ensure he continues to receive disability benefits he is due after serving the United States military for 3 years. Raymond Canabo is a U.S. citizen, Army veteran, stuck in Colombia, where he was visiting relatives after working for a military support company in Kuwait. Ahmed Baz, 22-year-old nanny living in New York, who was granted refuge status at the age of 16, so she wouldn't have to face persecution in Guinea, the country where she was born, but in the United States, she can't board a plane. They're all on the U.S. government's no-fly list, Garland, and none of them know why. They are filing a lawsuit with the ACLU, but none of the plaintiffs on the lawsuit have been told why or can find out why they're on the no-fly list, and none of them have been given a chance to defend themselves. How the hell does that help in our security, Garland?
It doesn't, but you got to realize something. What does this really boil down to? There's a lot of votes in fear. That's what it boils down to. There are a lot of votes in fear. There's a lot of votes in scaring people. The way our brain works, everything runs through the, I don't want to get into the amygdala and all that, but everything runs through part of our brain that controls our emotions, and fear is the big one because we want to stay alive. And if we can get to that part of the brain and control the emotions, we control the little hands that vote. And I think that's what it's all about, ultimately. I think, particularly after 9/11, a lot of politicians realized that whoever could scare the people the most in their direction could get the votes. So, unfortunately, once again, we're looking at an issue that has everything to do with politics and little, if anything, to do with safety.
Mark, are we nourishing fear? Is our government actually nourishing fear? We all have to go through this process at the airport. Sometimes it's humiliating. It's certainly a hassle. Never fly out of Dulles, please. It's absolute chaos. You know, I mean, is it necessary?
Are we nourishing fear? I don't know. As I heard you list that long intro, we, I remember thinking, not necessarily we. Maybe you, maybe some
not
people.
Not we, who, what?
We nourishing fear. Look, politicians often nourish fear. They do it on the right. They do it on the left. They're going to take away your Social Security. They're going to take away your guns.
So, in other words, we are nourishing fear.
Of course we are, but that's nothing new. Adams and Jefferson nourished fear in 1800 in the first contested election. This is not new. I think it's a false choice between security and civil liberties. I think we can have both. Now, obviously, do we have both? Well, I mean, I got my secret weapon here, my Constitution of the United States. I carry it with me wherever I go. And when they try to lock me up, I'll be like, no. And I think it'll work kind of like, a cross does to vampires. I'll just show my Constitution and they'll run away whimpering, right? Isn't that how it works? Garland, you're the ACLU. Isn't that how it works? I show my Constitution and they run away whimpering?
Yeah, right. Good luck, pal.
It doesn't work that way? Look, I do believe that there are necessities. I feel comforted by the fact, frankly, that I go through a metal detector on the way to the plane because I don't want people carrying guns on my airplane.
I'm not asking about that.
Here's my point.
Wait, stick to the point. The point is simply no-fly. No-fly rule.
I think the way the no-fly rule should work is I'm okay with the government having a list of names. I really am. You two may disagree with me. Of people that have suspect ties to blah, 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 blah. To me, that shouldn't be a no-fly list. That should be a super secure fly list. In other words, if people are on that list...
What about due process?
If people are on that list, I think it's fair to say we're going to check you really carefully, more so than someone who doesn't have a tie
to terrorists. And what about due process?
Well, I think that if you want to board a plane...
No.
It should be fair to you. You're not put in jail. This is a due process.
You're on the no-fly list.
I don't think you should not be allowed to fly entirely. But I do think it's fair to make you undergo more security.
How do you contest it?
I think you should be able to contest it.
How do these three people contest it?
I think the three people should be able, if they want, to, give
all
the information.
How can they can't even find out what the charges are, what the reason
is? They don't need to know what the charges are. What they can do is they can go and they can say, look, I'm born in Alexandria, Virginia, and I have kids and whatever. But at the end of the day, they may have to undergo a little bit more security.
Yeah, but I think...
But I don't think it should be prohibited from flying. I don't think a no-fly list should be a no-fly list. I think it should be an extra security list.
And it certainly shouldn't
apply to five-year-olds, six-year-olds. I mean, here's the deal. If you could show all these things, it is my hope that a judge or government official will take these things and remove you, possibly, from the no-fly list.
Well, this lawsuit by the ACLU is the first lawsuit that's ever been filed. It represents, at this point, 10 people.
A lot of these people are people with names similar to other people who really are dangerous.
Right. Not the point. Right. The point is you get on the no-fly list, and you don't even know why you're on the no-fly list.
I don't know that we should know why, but you should be able to get off.
Well, are you kidding me? In a free country?
Mark brought up a good point about being able to go to a judge because, when FISA court used to be actually used and when it used to work before the Patriot Act, the biggest problem I have with this no-fly list is there should be some mechanism where a person can find can appeal, can do something. There should be a mechanism, there should be a process, some type of a valid process. Apparently there isn't because we've had like five-year-old – did you know Cat Stevens is on the no-fly list? At any rate – there should be some way.
I don't think that's his name anymore.
No, but whatever the case, I call him Cat Stevens. And so anybody named Cat Stevens, Cat's in the cradle. Okay. Yeah. Look, What I'm saying is this. So many times when we look at things like this, the government, there's allegedly mechanisms to get people on there.
And they're all including all the Constitution.
But apparently, what's going on with this list is there is no real,
there's
some amorphous way that your name just kind of floats on there. God only knows why. And then once it gets on there, you literally can't fly. And you have no way.
Well, it should never be a no-fly list. I think there's one thing we can all agree on. Maybe we could disagree on whether or not there should be any list at all. But I think we can all three agree it shouldn't be a no-fly list. At least it should be a check you really carefully before you fly.
Yeah, but the real point is there should be a due process involved with it.
And like
I mean,
said,
that's almost unheard of.
I don't think you necessarily have the right to know how you got on the list. I mean, to do that would divulge all kinds of secret satellite communications that
you don't have the right to know what you're accused of?
Well, you're not being put in jail, Terry.
If you're stuck in Egypt and your family is in the United States and you can't come here with your family,
you should be able to agree to undergo a very careful security check and then get on that flight.
Right, absolutely. I agree. And the thing about it is that the no-fly list should only be really, I mean, it shouldn't be as big as it is. There should only be a few, as Mark said, there should only be a few characters here and there on that.
And it should be
that you're really
occasionally.
That are of real concerns. And even then, if it's the few characters of real concern, before they go on, let's just say someone's on that list and they're of real concern. They're taken aside. They may say, okay, you're
maybe
on this list, we're real concern.
If
you want to get on the plane, we'll take you aside and we'll do a full search and we'll sniff you for explosive with
dogs,
etc., etc.
And
but when it comes down to it,
get on that plane.
If you're clear, you still get on the plane.
Right.
Wouldn't that be nice?
But
the reason is because now we have doors that are locked, so you can't go in and barge the pilots. And they're going to check your luggage really carefully, as they should. But then the point is the no-fly list shouldn't be a no-fly list. It should be a super secure fly list.
Yes.
And then I'm okay.
And
it
should involve due process. Let's go on to the next one. Mark, I hesitate to even ask you this, but I'll give you a little history here. In 1956, in retaliation for the Montgomery bus boycott, Alabama moved to stop the NAACP from conducting any further business in the state and issued a subpoena that would have forced them to disclose their membership. The NAACP refused to turn over their membership, and in 1958, the Supreme Court decided in the group's favor. In fact, in the ruling, Justice John Marshall Harlan declared that privacy in group association may, in many circumstances, be indispensable to preservation of freedom of association, particularly where a group espouses dissident beliefs, groups like the Raucous Caucus. Anyway, now we have before the House of Representatives this wonderful law that my companions here think is just fine, called the, I love that they bothered to create this title to create an acronym. I just love how they do that. Democracy is strengthened by casting light on spending in elections. In other words, the Disclose Act.
You should see what the Patriot Act is.
They got to work to do
providing
that.
Providing adequate tools intercept, obstruct terrorism.
And this bill forces politically active organizations to disclose the names of their donors, giving as little as $600.
Demanding, and you know what?
Demanding disclosure for such a small amount of money violates Americans, this is the ACLU, right to privacy, and will have a chilling effect on free speech and in our elections. Regulations like this can become a serious problem for supporters of controversial issues where anonymity is not just a matter of preference or convenience. The harassment attack and attacks on members of the civil rights movement show that anonymity can, in fact, be a matter of personal safety. ACLU obviously opposes this because of its overreaching disclosure requirements that have a deterring effect on the participation of political dissidents and political debate that is vital to robust democracy. Mark?
I agree with the Disclose Act. I disagree with the ACLU.
Disagree with what?
The ACLU. I think they're wrong. Look, $600
is
a substantial enough sum that if you're giving $600 to influence an election, not just to join an organization, but to influence an election, I want to know who you are. And the reason I want to know who you are is not because I'm afraid of the NAACP, but because I'm afraid of the EXXON and the MOBIL and the BP. I'm afraid of massive corporations putting their money in our system, and it seems to me that if you are going to try to influence an election through your money, I have a right to know who you are. I am perfectly
You're not satisfied
fine
with knowing the organization, as you will know with the NRA, because, of course, they don't have to disclose any of that information.
As are the labor unions.
Well, there is an exception that I don't like. We discussed that last week. I wish
but
the exception worked
there.
You
think every citizen that gives more than $600 to an organization, no matter what...
To a political organization.
Yeah, okay.
Not a religious organization, not a fraternal organization.
But the point is, you have to give it... That has to
an organization that spends money on political campaigns.
Right.
And keep in mind...
I mean, if you support the ACLU, I don't even know if the ACLU spends money on political campaigns. Maybe you can answer
no,
that.
No, they can't.
They don't.
They do.
So if they don't,
know,
then
they,
you can give money to the ACLU, and it's not...
Right, they send out political questionnaires and things like that. But...
I don't think they'd be covered by this.
Right.
Well, they would be.
They
don't have a large enough membership.
Yeah, but they
so
are,
everybody is giving money to the ACLU.
They're 501c3, so they're 501c3, which means basically they can't endorse or get involved
right.
in politics
so
anyway, so it doesn't apply to
them.
That's
but they are still politically
but
active.
Keep in mind that...
And every member of the ACLU that spends more than $600
be known. No, it wouldn't apply to them. It wouldn't apply
they don't give money
because
to endorse
they're
501c3.
It means they can't endorse candidates. In fact, if that applied to them, they'd be violating the law because they'd be going against what the laws say. The 501c3 cannot endorse candidates. They cannot take part in political activities. If they were to do that, which then would mean they had to disclose who was giving them the money, they'd be in violation of the law. But that's all.
Is the NRA 501c3?
But wait a minute.
No. Because they're a political PAC.
Right. Yeah, but my point is
they're a membership organization.
Keep in mind that this whole Disclose Act is to deal with the Citizens United case. This is to deal with the fact that corporations who are persons can donate any amount of money they want to various organizations, which we know that they're going to start up the political organization. They're going to start up their own political organizations.
Why define it this
and then,
way? Then?
Well, here's what I'm saying. They're going to start up their own political organizations. They're going to donate money to
we
them.
We know that. We discussed that.
So
why
the issue is that we need this. The reason we need this is because it's okay if they do it as long as we know who's doing it. It's okay if we see all of these advertisements for Senator so-and-so, as long as at the end of that advertisement we see this was paid for by Exxon, as long as if we go to the website of, People for a Greener America, we look and we see this is by the strip mining corporations of America. So I agree with the Disclose Act, mainly because the Citizens United decision puts voters in a position of being fooled by big corporations.
This proposition that we're discussing doesn't have a thing to do with corporations.
I think it has everything to do with corporations.
It's not just
$600.
No. But what Terry's asking, Garland, is whether let's take corporations
go down
out
to
of
this
it.
Low.
Should
I mean,
it apply to individuals?
We're trying to establish
get more than $600 for political campaign. I say yes. I want to know if Rupert Murdoch is spending more than $600 on a political candidate.
Anita is shocked. Anita, if you want to ask
the
question and challenge, get up here on the mic and challenge this guy.
I consider myself, I give a lot of money.
That's why we have a mic here.
Let me tell you something. In 2008, all right, I probably gave as much as I've ever given in my entire life to political candidates, and I think it was about $300. Between Obama and the Democratic Party, Congressional Committee, Senatorial Committee, I thought I was spending a lot. That's probably the most I've ever spent on any political campaign. I would venture to guess that less than 0.1% of Americans actually give $600 to any particular candidate. And when that happens, I want to know who it is.
It is a very small amount.
That's not admissible in court. I'm sorry. That's speculation.
I don't think it is. I think most people give $10, $20, something like that.
Okay.
Hey, Terry, have you ever given more than $600 to a single political candidate?
Only candidates you've never heard of.
But you have.
Terry gives
more than
$600. Terry gives tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands.
Garland, have you ever given more than $600 to a
single
political candidate?
I've ever had
to
support various political candidates.
I think I gave $200 to Obama.
I've mortgaged my house 5 times just to support political candidates.
Only you.
Now, but I mean, the real point is you're suppressing individuals. This
you're not suppressing anything. You're letting people know who is behind other people, and I want to know that.
Does the government have to know?
It's not the government. It's me. We the people.
Right.
I want to know who's behind that political candidate. Absolutely. If Sarah Palin is financed by...
Terry, for instance, which it may very well be...
It's not about corporations.
Which may very well be the case, I might add.
By Pat Robertson... I want to know it.
You want to know it. Okay.
Now, if he gives her $500,
so
I don't know it.
If we put a clause in the bill that you get to know it, then you'll be satisfied. We don't have to let the government know it.
I think if
we don't have to let the FBI
bucks,
know it. We don't have to let the entire government computer system record the fact.
I think $600 is a reasonable number. Very few people give more than $600. They tend to be very rich people. And if they're behind a political candidate, I think we, the people, have a right to know it. You bet.
Okay. 4 minutes of this nonsense. We'll move on to a topic that they cannot debate. Watch.
Oh, yeah. Good luck finding one of those, pal.
We're going to move on to what we're discussing here. By the way, this is the Raucous Caucus. We're not too raucous today. We're relatively serious today, but we'll get more raucous, I'm sure, because that's what we do. But we are discussing what price security. We're obviously in disagreement here already on what price security. You can certainly, nobody cares. My companions don't care if you have a no-fly list, challenge it, and you can't appeal it, and you can't find out why you're on the list. And my companions don't care if you give money to a political organization, and they know who you are, and if it happens to be some organization like the NAACP was in South Carolina, these days they will get all that membership list of anybody over $600, and the government will be able to persecute or follow or whatever, do whatever they want, as they have done in the past. Somehow, I honestly believe, my good friends and colleagues, that you guys are living in Never Never Land.
Do you think that Terry and the Black Helicopter crowd has a lot in common?
No, but I'm submitting his name to the government for a no-fly zone. I tell you, I mean, for a no-fly list. I tell you,
I'm already on the list. What are you talking about? Right.
They probably sent me a letter back.
He's
number one to ten.
Yeah, he's the first ten names.
Not only that, they don't even check my baggage anymore. They just deny it.
Yeah, right.
It's on the curb.
Look, they just take your baggage and they throw it in like the bomb truck and incinerate it.
All I know is I saw his picture all over the airport.
Yeah, right. You know, and I don't get fed either on the planes. I don't know about you guys, but, you know.
That's also a conspiracy.
Oh, okay, anyway. What topic we're going to get into next, gentlemen, which I'm really interested to hear your opinions on. We've got a couple minutes here before we take our first break. We're going to get into torture. Now, we're not going to torture you, Mark. Don't worry. We're not going to torture you, Garland.
You already are with
the things
so. You're saying.
Intellectually, I hope you're in pain because you certainly deserve to be. I hope you're getting a migraine. Forgive my meanness. You're bringing out a mean streak in me. And anyway, we're going to talk about torture, which, yes, is still going on in this country, and we're still ignoring. We are still ignoring torture, which I think has a great moral component as well as a legal component on who we are as a people and what motivates this country. And talk about instilling fear and nourishing fear. What can possibly nourish fear amongst the American public or any public group than the fact that we continue to torture?
And let's encourage people to come up to the microphone, too.
And yes, and by the way, we are at Ben's next door to Ben's Chili Bowl, 12th and U Street. And we have a microphone right here in the audience, so you can come up and challenge what we're saying, which I certainly hope you do, if you so wish. And we have to cut away to our break now. This is the Raucous Caucus. I'm Terry DeKester with Mark Levine and
Garland Nixon.
Thank you. We'll be right back. Why can't I lay low? Why can't I say what I mean? Why don't I stay low? And we're back with the Raucous Caucus on WPFW 89.3 FM, a Pacifica station involved with the Pacifica Network, broadcasting to you 50,000 watts here in Washington, D.C. On my right, I'm Terry DeKester, and on my right is
Mark Levine. And to the cab driver driving my friend who's playing our show, thank you very much. Keep playing it every Tuesday at 7 p.m.
And drive the passenger over here to Ben's.
I just got a text.
1213
U Street.
Come on,
taxi driver. 1213 U Street.
You know,
bring him along so he can join
us. Park the cab, turn off the meter, get in here. All right. Garland Nixon is also here.
You forgot to say on your left.
On my other right.
Oh.
Garland Nixon.
Oh.
Yes.
On your left, politically.
There is no left here, you know. I mean, it's not for me.
That's
you
true.
I'm the only true progressive left in this dump. I mean, forgive me.
This
all right.
Wonderful establishment where we are very glad
I was talking
to
about this little environment here. Anyway.
That would be we are false progressives, right?
All right. Gentlemen,
I think he means us.
Yes, I do. And Jabari also. I mean, we have a mic here, Jabari. I can see the look on Jabari's face here.
He's looking very skeptical.
We've got this great audience here, you know. I mean, got Gladys there looking, our producer looking beautiful with her hat.
We
got a great audience here. Their minds are churning, and I can see that. They're dying to get up to the microphone and ask questions of my companions who obviously don't know what they're talking about. But I love them. Trust me, I do love them. Moving right along. This is, again, from a report. Originally in the Daily Report in the ACLU. This past February, this gentleman was at a hearing at Georgia House Defense and Veterans Affairs Committee to testify against a measure that would have had the effect of keeping the prison in Guantanamo Bay open by urging Congress to publish transfer of Guantanamo Bay detainees to the United States. This gentleman was there testifying before a committee about not keeping Gitmo open. In response, one of the representatives of the Georgia Congress stood up and stated that not only would he not vote against the measure about closing Guantanamo, but he would rather further amend it to clarify that the men held at Guantanamo be subjected to waterboarding, skateboarding, surfboarding, whatever.
Is skateboarding really in the bill?
Yeah, apparently so. The fact that a state legislator would make light of torture was shocking enough. He was further taken aback that no legislator present for the hearing that day expressed outrage over the remarks. This blasé official attitude towards torture, which has pretty much permeated our country, though extreme, is not, unfortunately, unusual. Despite disavowing torture, the Obama administration continues to shield from civil liability, criminal investigation, public scrutiny, any Bush administration officials who authorized torture. This is all the more unacceptable as a growing public record of official documents and testimonies makes undeniably clear that detainees were tortured, abused, and in over 100 cases killed in U.S. custody at Gitmo, Bagram, etc. There are now 150,000 pages of formerly secret government documents related to abuse and torture of prisoners in United States custody overseas. I'm going to give you an example of one of the investigations in Georgia unearthed through ACLU's Freedom of Information lawsuit, allegations of abuse committed by soldiers stationed in Fort Benning, Georgia. The Criminal Investigation Division of the Department of Defense initiated an investigation after Playboy magazine published an article on May 24th titled Death and Dishonor. Soldiers quoted in the article alleged that soldiers assigned to the 115th Infantry Battalion had, among other things, shot an unarmed Iraqi while he was fleeing, hogtied him, physically assaulted him, and dug inside the wounds of the enemy prisoner of war while they were incapacitated. The investigation determined that there were indications that the allegation of abuse while in custody could have occurred. The investigation was closed, of course, when the guy died and was thereby forgotten entirely. Mark, it still goes on. This is in the past that it's reporting. There's still a whole section of Bagram Air Force Base that is totally closed off, that has no access to the Red Cross, has no access by any reporters or any news media. It is run by Special Ops and CIA. Good golly, what do you think goes on there?
Well, I guess I have to see your article. I would hope, I do know that President Obama has very clearly disavowed torture, and I would hope very much that he would keep his promise. Guantanamo Bay has to be shut down. The whole purpose of Guantanamo Bay, as we recall, was specifically to try to take people outside the law. The argument was, the Bush administration's argument was, well, it's not the United States, so they don't have constitutional rights, but it's still under our control, and it's not in our country since we have a long-term lease, and if we go through all of these legal shenanigans and gyrations, somehow we're not responsible at all. That was rejected by the U.S. Supreme Court in the Hamdi decision, and I don't understand, frankly, how Obama is keeping Gitmo open. This is one of those few things that I'm quite critical of the president about. As far as torture, I would hope, and that's why I want to see where your article comes from, I would hope that we're not doing that anymore. I know that we're still doing extraordinary rendition, which I detest, where we basically send people to other countries to be tortured. I'm not justifying that, but I don't know that we are doing it right now. I sure hope not, and if we are, we need to stop.
Garland? Well, are you feeling any more secure in our country knowing that apparently we still torture? Are you feeling safer? Is this the security you wanted for your nation?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, on the issue of security, let me just say this. Mm-hmm. The issue of security is based on a person's fear of whether or not they will die, right? This whole security thing, I'll be blown up by terrorists, I'll be shot, right?
I like to feel I'm not threatened by my government, too.
But to me, it's kind of ridiculous because the odds are, you know, you'll, like, die in your car of not having a seatbelt or you'll, you know, die of smoking. There's so many things. You know, we're looking like 40,000 people each year, like, drown their head in a 5-gallon bucket or something, you know, ridiculous like that.
40,000 people drown their head in a bucket.
I'm being facetious here. You get the point.
All right.
But so many there's.
We were look at this audience. They were taking you dead seriously.
I'm like, I'm watching out for buckets.
They were ready to get their buckets out of their houses, buckets. Out of their neighborhoods.
That's right. We'll start at like no buckets. We'll get T-shirts with one of the circles with a line going to the bucket. But my point is this: the whole issue of security is a fraud because there are so many things that we can die of. The issue of us being killed by a terrorist is the lowest on the list. But to say this about the whole, as soon as somebody reads something about somebody being tortured in Iraq or shot without a weapon or anything, as soon as I hear
shot without a weapon,
yes, an unarmed person, an unarmed individual, an unarmed Iraqi. Shot.
Okay. You had me confused.
Now, as soon as I hear that, the first thing I think is this: the invasion of Iraq was a violation of international law. A complete and total violation. If an American diplomat accidentally steps on an Iraqi's foot and gives him a bruise, then it's a violation of international law. It's just as bad. Nothing should happen to any human being in Iraq as a result of an American, because we're not supposed to be there. And as far as I'm concerned, anything that we do to any Iraqi is a violation of international law in any way, shape, or form. Now, I'm not saying that if some soldier does something, then I'm pointing the finger at that soldier. Yes, absolutely, there's personal responsibility. The fact is, our country and those who should be in jail right now who made the decision to invade Iraq ultimately put us in a position where whenever we hear the word Iraq or something happened to an Iraqi citizen or an Iraqi civilian, we're not supposed to be there in the first place. It's just all a tremendous violation of international law, and there's no excuse for anything that happened
there. This goes way beyond Iraq, obviously. What about the people that, in fact, authorized the torture?
Well, see, I don't know what's going on now.
Nothing.
I don't know what's happening
now. Jay Bybee, who wrote the memo, who I happen to know, I'm ashamed to say, is now in a district court.
But I think the three of us are in agreement that those individuals who were involved in torture,
no matter how high up.
Yeah. Oh, especially high up.
More high up than
my point is the people high up. Because if some person at the top tells some soldier to do this, and it's on the battlefield, the soldier can be shot. On the battlefield, a soldier can legally be shot.
And he also has, by the military code of justice, he has the right to say no.
Well, it's kind of hard to do that.
But that's not realistic.
My point is the people higher up who make these types of decisions are the ones who should
pay. One point on you, and I think you'll agree with this correction, Mark, that, in fact, in our Constitution, any treaty that we sign becomes part of our law. Therefore, the Geneva Convention that we not only initiated, but we signed,
is
part of our law of the land. And it cannot just be easily dismissed.
That's true. Article 6, this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which will be made in pursuant thereof, and all treaties made, shall be the supreme law of the land. But here's the thing, Terry. This is about the rule of law. This is about the Constitution. There are clear standards. There is the Geneva Conventions. There is the Eighth Amendment that prohibits cruel and unusual punishments. And I just want to see the rule of law apply. In other words, if a soldier in the heat of battle shoots in self-defense, that's war. It's hell. It's life. He may even accidentally kill an innocent person. It's terrible, but that's legal. If, on the other hand, the examples you gave, a soldier's already disarmed, there are laws about the prisoners of war. You can't shoot them. And soldiers can and have been court-martialed. And the issue is, all I'm asking the President of the United States and the military is to follow the rule of law. Fight by those rules, and I'm okay with it. Go beyond the rules, and I'm not okay with it.
You know, the big thing about this that scares me about this, besides the torture itself, the moral implications as well as the legal implications, is once again, no matter what the crime in this country, the higher up you are, the more immune you are.
Yeah. Mm.
And we are seeing nobody.
A little bit Abu Ghraib.
Yeah. We are behind nobody being held accountable for instituting the torture memos, et cetera. We're seeing nobody really held accountable for what Goldman Sachs did, AIG did. We're seeing nobody held accountable for BP. You know, so therefore, why should the American citizen in somewhat defense of the American citizen and some of their extreme reactions, feel secure in this country where there is not accountability for the highest crimes that we witness?
Well, just to be clear, unfortunately, and I wish it were not so, what Goldman Sachs, AIG, and BP did were legal. Now, they were wrong.
That's the problem.
They should have been illegal.
Right.
They should have been crimes, and I support making them crimes. What they did was, but the torture was never
illegal. That's what happens when you buy laws and create laws.
You buy politicians, you don't have to buy laws.
Okay. And they create
All right. Now I want to take it to one more. How much time we got? I got to watch my time here. Okay. We got
20 minutes.
Okay. We're going to get deep here. You know, we've been pretty frivolous so far.
For a change?
It's been nothing but yucks from here on out, right? Except for the bucket idea. And we're getting
Do we have a blowout preventer?
Do we have a blowout preventer? We're covered. Don't worry about it.
I've kicked that bucket.
Okay. All right. Mark Orgon, do either one of you know what a fusion center is?
The fusion center?
I have an idea what a fusion center is.
What do you think a fusion center
fusion
is?
Fusion center, well, if it's what I'm thinking of, it's it is a...
Nuclear?
No. The fusion center I'm thinking of is in law enforcement, where they have a number of various law enforcement, government agents, FBI, et cetera. All of these agencies come together, and they all work together to figure out who the terrorist is.
This
and where
is where
he's
Garland's
gonna,
past
where
actually
he's
helps
strike.
Him. Yeah,
he's all right. I thought Garland might know.
In the interest of disclosure, I was a police official in the state of Maryland at one time.
Police official and achieved the rank of major, I understand?
Yes.
Do we have to salute
Major
now?
Disappointment.
Did you bring your... Not true.
I could go
not
on
true.
With the joke. Not
Terry Garland was one of those pigs you were protesting against.
Yes, he is feared throughout the state of Maryland. And in fact, he's feared right here in this panel.
Well, mainly by law enforcement agents, because I was also the vice president of the ACLU at the same time.
Yeah, well, that's a tough combination.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
All right. You're right. And let me give a little details on this.
I don't know. An ACLU is a police officer, almost like a liberal on Fox.
Yeah, that's right.
It's an oxymoron.
Contradiction in terms, but
it's an oxymoron, isn't it? Okay. There were, in a report commissioned by the ACLU, 40 fusion centers when the report was published. 6 months later, there were 58 fusion centers. And now, as of July, well, this is not even up to date, July 2008, there are 72 fusion centers.
Why do they scare you, Terry?
Yeah, why?
Well, let me give you an example of what a fusion... First, let me tell you what a fusion center really is. The government is spying on Americans in ways the founders of our country never could have imagined. The FBI... Federal intelligence agencies, military, state and local police, private companies, firemen and emergency medical technicians even, are gathering incredible amounts of personal information about ordinary Americans that can be used to construct vast dossiers that can be widely shared with a simple mouse click through new institutions like the Joint Terrorism Task Forces, the fusion centers, which are not the same as the Joint Terrorism Task Force, we can say maybe that's needed, public and also public and private partnerships. The fear of terrorism has led to a new era of overzealous police intelligence directly activated, as in the past, against political activists, racial and religious minorities, and immigrants. These are what fusion centers are. This is your information that's gathered with every other kind of report you can possibly imagine in one data place so that they can get all the information on you they want at any single moment. Some of these, again, are private partnerships that actually have this information. In March 2008, here's an example. The Virginia Fusion Center, by now there's more than one, issued a terrorism threat assessment that described the state's universities and colleges as nodes for radicalization, and characterize the diversity.
Pretty accurate. When I was
there,
they sure were.
And characterize the diversity surrounding a Virginia military base and the state's historically black colleges as possible threats.
Threats to what?
To the American security. This is a bulletin put out by the Virginia Fusion Center, a terrorism threat assessment put out. Sent out to these other centers, including Joint Terrorism Task Force, et cetera, to be on the lookout at black universities because they are a threat.
Let me, a couple things.
Not to mention those academic institutions, which are nodes for radicalization.
Well, keep in mind, too, there's probably more than that number. For instance, the one in Maryland isn't
called.
That's the name. The one in Maryland, MCAC, Maryland Clearance and Analysis Center, is not called a fusion center. So just because you call it a fusion center doesn't, you know, so there are others that they elected in a given state not to call it a fusion center. But there's both validity to your statement in some areas and having dealt with fusion centers and having worked with the Joint Terrorism Task Force. There's validity in what you're saying, but then in another way, they do some very good and positive stuff. Number one, let me tell you something that happened in Maryland that I know very well. Okay. What happened in Maryland was the ACLU, once again, found out that what they were doing in Maryland was they were infiltrating peaceful organizations, such as, you know, environmental organizations and things like that, infiltrating them, getting information on the members, and they were putting the members' names because they have lists of people that are kind of going on their terrorism watch list. They were putting the members' names on this terrorism watch list, and the only thing, you know, you might be in an organization called Save the Bears or something. So the ACLU found this out, went to court, and they had to do a lot of changing. They had to get rid of a lot of stuff on the terrorism watch list. So what you're saying is very valid, and there have been abuses. By the same token, they do some good stuff too. They have to. One of the things,
you know,
they do.
We get 2.5 commies, yeah. So therefore we imprison or blacklist everybody
right.
else. So, you know, whoopee.
I think you just got to watch them close. But I think
who's watching them? Where's the accountability?
The ACLU. They caught them.
I'll tell you.
Is there anybody in the government?
So everybody support the ACLU. That's what I'm saying. Everybody.
I'll tell you. I'm glad the ACLU is there, and I'm glad that they're watching the watchdogs.
Wait a minute. If they're watching too, shouldn't we be concerned about that?
No, because they're watching the watchdogs.
Okay,
well,
the whole watching thing freaks me out.
I actually think we've come a long way from the days when J. Edgar Hoover was spying on Martin Luther King and trying to find. Well, if King was a communist, and when he couldn't find that, trying to find infidelity. There was definitely a time, certainly throughout American history, I think of the McCarthy era, I think of the 60s, I think of even into the 70s, when the FBI, COINTELPRO, many of us know, was used to spy on peaceful anti-Vietnam or civil rights or organizations.
And you think it stopped when Hoover died?
I think it's not as bad as it once was. Call me naive.
Naive.
Okay, I knew you would.
Naive.
I knew you would.
Naive. Let's hear from the audience. Naive.
I knew you would.
Naive.
Yeah. Naive. I knew you would.
Okay.
Look, here's what we know happened under the Bush administration, and we know because it came out and was exposed. We know the Bush administration was spying on virtually every one of us. We know that, for example, without ever getting a Fourth Amendment warrant, every single one of us that has used a telephone, and that's most of us in this room, I think, or a cell phone, unless you belong to Quest, which wasn't my carrier, and Quest was the only one to turn down the government request to find out every record of every person we've ever talked to. Now, they didn't have, thank God, you know, the transcripts of our conversations, but they knew who we were calling. That's excessive. That went too far. And Obama has said he stopped that. Now,
and AT&T said, oh, sorry.
No, look.
Oh, golly, I'll stop.
I think that the reason we discovered it is anytime you have that kind of vast spy network, I actually feel enough of it comes out. I think we find out.
Now, you know also that every financial transaction you record, that you transact, is recorded as well.
It's recorded, but not necessarily by the fusion centers. Look.
Oh, yes.
I'll tell you
that's
this.
That's all the information. Yeah,
I would hope that the ACLU is monitoring this. Garland says, for example, that they came in and they stopped this.
Yep.
And I guess my question for Garland is, if they stopped it, quote, unquote, and got a court order to stop it, how is it enforced? I assume the judge checks on them to make sure.
But you are aware that, you know, from the 70s and the 60s, we have so much more, and we have to take this into account. You know, technological advancement in terms of data and information storage and
data
mining.
You're right, Terry, but you know what? I feel safer because of that, and I'll tell you why.
You do.
Because if you try to spy on 300 million Americans, and I know just how many text messages my niece sends a day.
There is
no way that you can spy on 1,000 messages of 300 million people. There just aren't enough eyes for that.
I want to provide the naive crown to my good colleague here.
All right.
And I can tell you exactly why. Because, you know, it's not spying on 300,000 people that is the point. The point is when they want to get you, then they've got their finger
on
the button.
If they want to get you, they need to get a warrant. That's
well, the other thing
bull.
Is this. The other
oh,
thing, about, the other thing is this.
I was arrested in the 70s for opposing the Vietnamese War for no legitimate crime. Today, I got out of the jail.
What was the charge? Trespass? What was the charge?
The charge was desecration of the flag, which I did not do. I, in fact, if you want the history, I hung an American flag.
But I don't think that would happen today. I really don't.
Oh, that's not the point. I hung an American flag upside down, indicating the international symbol of distress. That's what that means, right? The police arrived within 20 minutes of that flag, dragging me out the door. You're under arrest unless you tear down that flag immediately. I said, bull, it's not against the law. They said, it is against the law. You're going to jail. I said, oh, fine, I'll tear it down, I'll check the law. I went down to the local library. This is outside Chicago. And the wonderful thing is I walk into the library. I say, do you have any books on flag law? And the librarian hands me this stack of books. Not that there was any complicity between the library and the cops in this short time. But anyway, she just happened to have all these books. I went home. I said, okay, I'll play your silly game. My wife and I made our own flag. 3 stars, 12 stripes, not an American flag, hung that upside down as a symbol of distress. In 20 minutes, I was arrested
now,
again.
Here's the thing about
Now, the point is that I'm trying to make, if they wanted to make an issue, and the only reason the issue wasn't made is because the press followed me right to the police station.
Exactly.
And
right.
saved
That's
my butt.
That's one of the advantages we have in America.
But if they wanted to make an issue today, they'd push that little button on their cursor. They would be able to get from the Fusion Center enough stuff to hang you, me, and everybody in
okay.
this room.
First
it
of
would
all,
be admissible
yeah.
if they don't have a Fourth
right.
Amendment
it's,
warrant.
Yeah, and first of all, as regarding...
Yeah, and it would be admissible unless I'm rendered. Yes. Not that I'm that big a threat, but if I were, if they wanted to think it was, then they could render me, which is fine. Then
you
they
no, no, if you're talking about extraordinary rendition, then just to be clear... You can't do that today unless you're not an American citizen. Now, I still think it's wrong.
Also, all the Latinos,
I think
all
it's
the
absolutely
Latinos we
wrong.
Can render.
No, I think it's absolutely wrong for non-citizens, but they couldn't at least that's some protection.
Yes, and regarding, Terry, regarding your arrest, first of all, that was an illegal arrest.
Of course
clearly.
It was.
So the question is this.
You should sue now and get damages.
Now, here's the thing about it, though. Here's the thing about it. A guy in law enforcement, I saw this many times, the ACLU just won a huge suit or settled a huge suit against Baltimore City for illegal arrest, just telling somebody, move or I'll lock you up. And the person says no. They grab them. They lock them up. They hold them for a while, and they're released without charges. And this happened tens of thousands of times. It was an illegal arrest.
Tens
the issue is, what happened to you was an illegal arrest. But that's not it. The issue. The issue is, what did you do afterwards? The problem with illegal arrests are people have an illegal arrest. They get angry. Hey, they shouldn't have done this.
Thank you.
And they end up disgruntled.
Thank you. I will tell you exactly what I did.
They do not pursue it far enough.
I'll tell you exactly what I did. I called the Legal Aid Society in Chicago. I called the ACLU. I got the exact same answer. Granted, it was a tumultuous time from both organizations. How much money do you have?
That's our legal system.
From the ACLU? No.
Yes,
no,
sir.
No.
Yes,
well,
sir.
Okay, maybe back then.
We don't know what happened.
But how much money have you got?
And the next point was, if you don't have money, you can't afford to fight this or object.
Right. But that wouldn't happen with the ACLU now because
but
you don't
But that is a fact it. Of our legal
that
system.
Have,
Let's face
right.
it. Rich people get more justice than poor
but
people. That's a fact. And
but,
it's,
right.
I'm not right. dispersing the ACLU.
Right.
But that is clearly a fact, and it's wrong, and I don't know what we're
saying.
And that
wouldn't happen now simply because the ACLU, what they do is they listen to whatever your case is, they run it by the legal review committee, and they decide whether or not they're going to take it based on the merits of the case and the various
But to me, that's a different issue from the spy.
Right. And what, but there are
But the other thing, wait a minute, I almost forgot what I was going to say about the Fusion Center. Let's not grant too much power to this here Fusion.
There's no power.
Wait a minute. Let's not say, look at the Fusion
Unless
Center
it's wanted.
With the idea that they can spy on everybody. I mean, a lot of times you don't have a lot of people. You know, I mean, you might have 10 or 12 or 15 people there. There's not this huge building full of people with all this power and authority. No, you've got people that for the most part, they're investigating call-ins. They're investigating things. What you said before is the threat assessment. One of the things that's done now that's big is, let's say there's going to be the 4th of July parade or the 4th of July fireworks. They will be required to do a threat assessment where they will review everything that's happening. They'll look at the back. Even, like, say, the people who are in charge of the fireworks company. They'll do background investigations on them to make sure that they don't, like, slip a truck bomb in there instead
I
of
want
the fireworks.
You, I want you to
so
know. I want
they're
you to
not
know.
Out here
I
just, like, staring know. Down everybody's throat.
This will astound you and astound my colleagues. Every time I produced a major event, I got complete clearance, unlimited clearance by the Secret Service.
Right.
I still
well,
can't figure out why.
Well, there
I
you go. You're not as dangerous as you think you are, Terry. I'm sorry.
Maybe not as dangerous as we think you are.
You're not.
The point
you
is...
You think you're a bigger
no,
threat than you
that's not
are.
The point, you guys. And the point is, obviously, if they want to make an issue of it,
no.
they can make it.
No, they can't, because in order to gather this evidence legally,
a click,
you've got to have a warrant.
On,
if they're gathering... In order to use it, not to gather it, I should say, in order to use the evidence against you in a court of law, they have to have a Fourth Amendment. So if you're a citizen. Now, if you're not a citizen...
And you don't think I would probably wind up, if they found the various things that I would wind up on the no-fly list. And then being on the no-fly list, of course, I would have no due process of law, so I would have no right to appeal. So how, the real question, gentlemen, is how the heck is all of this making you and me more secure, or is it simply adding to the tension, the insecurity, the anxiety that's rampant in our country today? That's the question.
First of all,
are we more secure by all of this excess, or are we, in fact, nourishing the fear and the anxiety, the xenophobia, the tea parties, the weapon gathering, all of that?
First of all, I would encourage all of our listeners who have access to a computer to read a paper written by a guy named Hofstadter called The Paranoid Style. It's very good, and it's referenced by intellectuals who are discussing this issue. It's called The Paranoid Style. Just look up The Paranoid Style, Google that. But you know one of the issues here? The issue of security is subjective. It's interesting what you're saying, because 99% of it is this. Do we have a feeling of security as opposed to security? And it goes the same way. Are we walking around afraid constantly that the government's looking? You know, are we paranoid at every turn that the government's looking at us, the government's doing that, so much so that it interrupts our daily lives? I think that's when it's unhealthy. So there is a fine line between being concerned with our security and with the government and crossing the line into being paranoid and afraid.
Would you agree that accountability is necessary on that fine line?
Absolutely not. No, just joking.
No, of course it is.
Accountability.
Yeah. Let me say this. Yeah. In the 19, up through 1973, and I forget the name of it, maybe you two can remember, there was a commission in the state of Mississippi that literally spied on 10% of the citizens. It was like East Germany, like North Korea. I forget the name, like the white citizens. I don't remember what it was. It was clearly anti-civil rights, a racist commission. And that's a very scary thing. Today in 2010, I got to tell you, I'm sure the government's spying on us to some extent, but corporations are spying on us more. They're recording every place
we
go,
I'm sorry,
everywhere we go, everything we do.
And
the only thing worse than corporations is our friends who are following us on Facebook, taking pictures of us, and posting wherever we go, including some of ourselves are telling. There is so much information. There is so much lack of privacy. Honestly, as far as I'm concerned, the government is the least of it. I fear everybody else monitoring everybody else far more than I fear the government.
And I guess what it comes down to is, you know, privacy is a thing of the past.
It kind
of
is.
It's really what it is. We're winding up. We're out of time here. We've got to give our credits first to our producer, Gladys Brooks.
In her beautiful hat.
Gladys.
Yay, Gladys.
And our engineer, Drew Franklin.
Hey, Drew.
And back in the studio, Sidrak.
Yay, go Sidrak.
And, of course, Garland Nixon and Mark Levine. And have I left anybody out?
The audience.
The audience, of course.
The audience,
the best audience in the world, who is right now, right before you, feeling more secure, safer, and happier than they've ever felt in their entire
lives. Now they're all nervous, and they're packing their guns.
And we have to wrap it up because we're out of time.
See you next Tuesday.
This is Terry DeCastro, Raucous Caucus. We'll be back next Tuesday at 7 o'clock. Good night.
WPFW, Washington.